But I'd like to address this sermon primarily to our young people, since this is a youth weekend, we might say. I'd like to see a show of hands, first of all. Everyone who is under age 18 that is currently learning how to drive. Can I see a show of hands? Are there any in the audience? Okay, one, two. What about the rest of you people? Okay, there's another fellow over here. How about under the age of 25 or below, that drive, that have your license or are training? How many there? Okay, there's a few more. It does seem to be a bit of a different world today. When I was growing up, the opportunity to drive a car was like the goal in the world. To be able to drive a car, especially by yourself. I mean, that was what you lived for. So when you hit, in the state of Wisconsin anyway, when you hit 15 and a half, you could get your temporary driver's permit, right? And then you were supposed to practice for the next 6 months. And back then, you didn't have any hours to fulfill. I understand today that you have to actually practice driving, and someone has to vouch for you that you have practiced X number of hours before you can get your license. Is that true? That's not true anymore. It is true. Okay. How many hours do you have to have? 50 hours? Something like that? It's a lot of driving you have to do. They weren't real concerned about that back in the day. But I was delighted just a few days after my 16th birthday to go down to the DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles, and take the driver's test and be free to drive. I mean, to have the power of that old station wagon under my foot. And, you know, that was living. So, well, of course, before you get your license, you have to take the driver's test, right? So you have to get the manual. You have to study the manual and make sure that you know what the laws of the land are. You have to know what all the different signs are, the shapes of the signs, and what those things mean on the sign. So when you take your test, you can identify those things, and then you can ignore those signs for the rest of your life. But I want to ask a question to all of you drivers or potential drivers, and again, this is for our young people. The rest of you can listen along. But I want to ask this question. Where is your stop line? Where is your stop line? Now, when we drive our automobiles or our trucks down the street, stop lines are something that we rarely ever notice. Most city intersections have them, and they have them for very important reasons. Now, I'm going to give you an example of a stop line in a story, true story. Where we used to live, I would often, back in the day, drive to the post office. Because back in the day, for whatever reason, we felt we needed to have a post office box to receive our mail. So you would drive to the post office box, and that's where your church mail would come to. So on the way to the post office, I would always come to a T-shaped intersection. You know what that is? You can't go straight through a T-shaped intersection because it's houses over there or businesses. You either have to turn left or you have to turn right. Or from your perspective, you either have to turn left or you have to turn right. Okay, you got this in your mind. You're at the T-intersection. Well, at the T-intersection, of course, is a stop sign. Now, if you imagine this, off to your left is a dead-end street that only goes one block long. So how many times do you think cars would come from that direction? I don't think in 12 years of living there, I ever saw one car come from that direction. Now, the other direction, if you turn right, then you go down the street, and the first thing on the right is a nursing home with a big parking lot in front. So nobody ever comes from the right. So what do you think most people do when they come to that intersection, where there's a stop sign and a stop line, what do you think most people who are familiar with it would do? They might take a quick glance over there to the right, and they would roll right through that stop sign and continue on to the post office. Well, you could tell when there were police officers who didn't have anything to do that particular day. Because what they would do is they would sit in their squad car right there in the nursing home parking lot. And then when people came through that intersection, they would wave to them. But it wasn't the, hello, how you doing? It was a, come here, boy. Car would have to pull in and chat with the officer. And it seemed that the officers didn't talk a lot, but they loved writing notes. So they would write a note and hand it to the driver and wish them a good day, and they would go on their way. Now, you may be wondering, how does he have such intimate knowledge of this search circumstance? And you'd be wrong. Actually, I never got a ticket going through that intersection, and probably the only reason was they were too busy writing tickets for other drivers who were in front of me that they didn't see me actually roll through over the stop line and through the stop sign. Now, if these people who got this note from the police officer would have done one thing, they would never have had to pay that fine. If they would have paid attention to one thing, and that is the stop line. The stop line. So today we're going to talk about stop lines. What is a stop line? I would bet that there are some people in this audience who've been driving for decades that may not be able to answer that question. What is a stop line? Where is a stop line? What I hope to do is give you a few tools, not about driving, but to help you young people prepare for your future. And stop lines have a part to play in that. So let's begin by defining what is a stop line. Now, we're all familiar with stop signs. It's those red and white octagonal signs on the corner that many people ignore. But the stop line is a large white stripe that's painted on the pavement, usually straight out from the stop sign or a stop light. And that stop line is there for a purpose. It begins at the curb and it extends out in front of your car. And we are supposed to do what? As you approach the stop sign or the stop light, you see this large white line cutting across in front of you. And it always stops in the middle of the street. So obviously it has nothing to do with traffic coming the other way. Now, for most drivers, the stop line is that white line that's under your car as you drive through the intersection. What is the purpose of a stop line? Well, it has the word stop in it, so that gives us a pretty good indication of what it is. A stop line is used in conjunction with a stop sign or a stop light. And the purpose is to tell us as drivers where to stop. It's not that you should stop. That's the purpose of the stop sign or the light. But the stop line tells you where to stop, because they're not always one and the same. Sometimes you'll come to an intersection with a stop light and the stop line is painted quite a bit further back, because maybe there's a crosswalk. And so you have a stop line and then a crosswalk, the white lines that go all the way across the street. So the stop sign tells us that we must stop, but the function of the stop line is to tell you exactly where you should stop. In case there is no stop line painted across the street, there is still one there. And I checked the Texas driver's manual yesterday just to be sure it's true here as well. If there is no stop sign painted on the street, there is an imaginary line that extends from the base of the stop sign or the stop light directly across the street in front of you, and that becomes your stop line. So my point is, there is a stop line even if it is invisible. It's an interesting thought. We'll talk more about it as we go along. The stop sign is the furthest limit one can go before stopping. But the stop line is usually before the stop sign. Now, why? Why do cities and towns spend so much money and time painting these white lines at the intersections with stop signs and stop lights? Isn't that enough? Isn't the stop sign enough? And the answer probably is no. Why do towns and cities spend so much money doing this? It is to protect you. Now, there are at least three categories of people that benefit from stop lines telling you where to stop. The first group of people that are protected is us, me, as a driver. I am protected if I stop at the stop line because my car is not hanging out into the intersection. So me and my passengers are all protected by stop lines. What's another group of people protected by stop lines? Well, the other drivers and their passengers. If my car's hanging out into the intersection and they crash into me, obviously they're not being protected. So the stop line is there to protect other drivers and their passengers as well. How about a third category of people that are protected by stop lines? Well, that's the pedestrians, the people walking across the street. Ever had a situation where you've stopped at a stop sign or stop light and there's somebody at your driver's door trying to walk across the street and you're hanging into the intersection virtually and they've got to either walk around in front of you hoping you don't start or they try to wave you on and walk behind you? It's a pretty awkward situation. So we've got at least three groups of people that are protected by stop lines. You and your passengers, the other drivers and their passengers, and of course, the pedestrians trying to cross the street. So stop lines are there for our protection, the protection of others. In short, they are beneficial to everyone, drivers, passengers, and pedestrians. Now, at this point, I'll ask, what do people think about stop lines? What do people think about stop signs? How about stop lines? What do people think about them? Well, I've taken the time to divide this into four groups of people. There, first of all, are those who are ignorant. Now, maybe some of you would be in that category, probably not this audience. But is it true that some people are just ignorant? Like, what's a stop line? Seen those white lines painted on there. I had no idea what they were. I'm supposed to stop behind them according to the law? Never heard of them. Having the foggiest idea what you're talking about. I've been driving these country roads for 45 years. I ain't never seen no stop line. So some people, sorry to put on a southern accent for that. I shouldn't do that. When we moved south, my wife said, you've got to stop using a southern accent when you make fun of people. And she's absolutely right. I've been run out of town more than once. I should put on a Boston accent. Maybe that'd be the thing to do here, right? Or New York. There's a second group of people. We've got the ignorant, but then we've got the people, I call them the disregarders. They kind of know that the stop lines are there. And I would guess most people fit into this category, probably me as well. They don't really perceive them as necessary. It's all right, but it's so rare that anybody gets hurt crossing over the stop line, stopping on top of the stop line, straddling the stop line when I stop. It's so rare for anybody to get hurt that I really don't think it's a big deal if I kind of ignore it, if I don't pay much attention to it. Then you got a third category of people I'm labeling. You got the ignorant, you got those who simply disregard it, and then you got the rebels. Now, again, none of us obviously would fit into that, but these are the people who openly rebel against the restrictions placed upon them by stop lines. And maybe they have a bars and stars flying from the back of their pickup. I'm just saying, no. But I'm just not going to do this. I'm not going to let anybody else tell me where to stop. I'll stop where I please to stop. I don't need some line painter telling me where to stop. So you've got the ignorant, you've got the disregarders, you've got the rebels. And then you've got maybe a fourth category, the diligent. Some few people actually diligently attempt to observe the stop lines and try their best to stop behind them, to follow the law. They understand their purpose and they want to preserve the safety of themselves and the other drivers and the pedestrians. So they realize that this contributes to an orderly and peaceful society. It protects everyone. So you've got the ignorant, you've got the disregarders, you got the rebels, you got the diligent. So you may be saying by now, that's the longest introduction to a sermon I have ever heard. Get on with it. So we didn't spend all this time just giving a driving lesson. This is hopefully driving to a point. And the question now becomes, where are your spiritual stop lines? Where are your spiritual stop lines? Young people, this is for you. You're at a stage of life that you are developing the habits that will carry you for the rest of your living days. And stop lines have an important part to play. Let's begin by putting it this way. God's law, we're all familiar with that. You probably, young people, had to memorize those laws, right? You probably got a star on the chart for being able to recite the Ten Commandments, right? And you get 3 stars on your chart if you memorize the Ten Commandments and spit them out long form. Wow, that's pretty challenging. So you know what God's laws are. They are the great stop signs of life. Before we get out into an area that could hurt us badly, there are stop signs that God places in front of us. These great stop signs are, there's 10 of them, the 10 commandments, right? They're the stop signs. Don't get out there into the intersection. Stop before you get hurt. Before you hurt others, before you run over a pedestrian. Stop. Well, what about stop lines? Now, we know stop signs are there for our good. God gives us these 10 stop signs to say, be careful. If you follow these, you'll be safe. But what about stop lines? Stop lines we might define as your personal standard. Your personal standard based upon God's laws. You have to paint your stop line with the understanding of the stop signs that are there. You draw them based upon God's law. Let's go through a few examples. One of God's great stop signs says, honor your father and mother. Don't cross the line into being disrespectful toward mom and dad. Now, one of the parents actually gave me this example, so that's why I'm teasing. Isn't it true that, does your attitude, I'm supposed to honor mom and dad. Where is your stop line? Does it stop just short of disrespect and dishonor and just kind of being fed up with our parents? I don't suppose there's anyone that hasn't at one time or another been fed up with their parents. Is it a sin to say that? I don't think so. I think it's true. Because what? Parents are people too. They make mistakes sometimes. I don't think very often. Sometimes I know as a teen, I thought my parents were absolutely wrong. And what it turned out to be, they were right again. and again and again and again. So where is your stop line? Does your attitude or behavior border on disrespect, dishonor, or do you paint your stop line far enough back from that intersection to keep you safe? Good question to ask. One of God's great stop signs says, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." Don't do it. Stop before you get to that intersection because you're going to get hurt. And you're going to hurt others, and you may damage them for life. And we obviously don't want to do that. So where, you know what the commandment says, where do you paint your stop line, your personal stop line? Is it far enough back from the intersection to avoid rolling ahead and crashing into sin? Is our personal stop line far too close to that intersection? So the front of the car is hanging out, and inevitably there will be an accident that will harm ourselves and others. So where do you paint your stop line? You can't paint the stop line in front of the computer with porn there. You can't do it. It's a little too close. You can't paint your stop line in the backseat of a car with a friend. That stop line is not far enough back. Now, we could go on to a lot of other examples. We get very graphic. We don't want to do that. But some can't figure out why they keep slipping into sin, why they can't seem to overcome. I would submit that they have drawn their stop lines too close to the intersection, maybe past the stop sign. So when they try to stop, the stop line is so far into the intersection that that's where they end up stopping. And they get hit every single time. So where do you paint your stop line? You know what the commandment says, but you must develop personal standards of behavior based on those laws. One of God's great stop signs says, remember the Sabbath. Why does he say, remember the Sabbath? Well, the next few words tell us. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. To keep it holy. So that's the big stop sign. Stop by sunset Friday afternoon. Keep this 24-hour period holy. And I'll have to admit, as a young person, when I came in contact with the truth of God, God began to work in my mind as a teenager. That was a tough one. It was hard. Where does this stop line have to be? Because right now, if I were in this audience, I'd probably be thinking about laser tag and basketball. And that was hardly keeping the Sabbath holy. I need to be focusing on the message, on the Bible, on what God is talking to me about in this message. So remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Where do you draw your personal stop line? Are we always on the edge of breaking God's Sabbath, doing things that we really shouldn't be doing? Do you find yourself slipping into Sabbath violations? If we do, the stop line is not far enough back. Not far enough back from the intersections. One of God's great stop signs says, "Thou shalt not kill." So we ask again, where is my stop line in regard to that stop sign? Do I allow hatred and anger and upset to rule in my life, in my family? Do I get out on the basketball court and people wonder what happened to this kid's Christianity? All of a sudden he's all elbows. What is that all about? I'm going to beat this guy. Where's our stop line? Have we missed it? Have we rolled out into the intersection? The very first time I came out from Ambassador College, I went to a church area. The pastor told me, you need to be on the basketball team because, not because I was a great basketball player, but last year, these two teams had a fist fight. These are two church men's basketball teams. And they had a fist fight over basketball the year before. So I sat down with the guys. Here I am, a punk kid, 21 years old, and said, look, fellas, we're not going to do this anymore. We are Christians first. We're basketball players next. And so I'm here to be the monitor. And if I'm sorry, I'm a young person, I know, but I've been given this responsibility. So if you guys don't behave, I'm gonna put you out. That's all there is to it. All of a sudden, oh, we've got a stop line here that we need to pay better attention to. So when it comes to Sabbath issues, when it comes to anger issues, this issue of hatred and murder, the spirit of murder, where is our stop line? Do you get on the internet, on your social media and rant? Where's your stop line? Where did it go? What is it supposed to be? Am I supposed to be ranting about this? And people say, oh, I'm just ranting. Stop it. Just stop. The stop line's way too far out in the intersection. Well, I was just letting off some steam. Yeah, who are you hurting? You just ran over a couple pedestrians. You just smashed into a couple cars in the intersection because you had to spout off about what you're upset about. Okay, I got that off my chest. Where is your stop line? Young people, you have to paint a stop sign, a stop line far back from the stop sign. Where is yours? One of the great stop signs says, thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not covet. How many Americans today are deeply in debt, swimming in debt because of coveting? Now, there's some reasons that people get badly in debt. Number one often is terrible health problems that just drain their finances. That can happen. But each of us has to say, am I coveting? Do I need this? How big a house do I need? Do I need a 5,000 square foot house for my wife and myself, the two of us to live there? Do I need that? Do I put myself deeply in debt so I can have this big house so that people can look at me and say, wow, what a nice house you have. Yeah, I'm not in most of it. And realistically, you know, in our situation at least, my wife probably is in the house by herself, I don't know, 50% of the time. I'm sleeping there about 50% of the time. And then the other 2 or 3% of the time, we have other people over. So do I need, well, do I put myself into huge debt to get this so that I can be? Well, no. So again, we have to think about where do we paint our stop line in regard to coveting? Have I put my family finances, would I put my family finances in jeopardy to get something that I don't really need? God's law is clear. It's obvious. But each of us must make personal decisions about how to apply God's law in our everyday situations. In many cases, it's obvious what would be sin. In other cases, it's not so obvious. So in those situations, our stop lines become very valuable. They can be of great safety for us. If we draw our stop lines far enough back from the intersection, we will usually not have a problem of a major collision with sin. So putting it another way, you, young people, must make judgment calls. You have to discern. You have to make judgment calls. You have to develop wisdom in that regard for all of those things. If our stop lines are drawn properly, we'll be fine. If not, we may find ourselves in the midst of sin wondering how we got there. Now, it would be a pretty bad sermon if we didn't read scriptures. So let's turn to Acts chapter 5. I'd like to read with you an example of a couple who painted their stop lines way too far. Or maybe they didn't have stop lines at all. But in their minds, it wasn't that big of a deal. Now, would these people, they were Jews of the first century, would they have an idea of what God's laws were? Would anybody in the New Testament church not already know that one of the great commandments is do not bear false witness? What would we say today? Don't lie. Lying is one of those stop signs you shouldn't cross. It's going to harm you. It's going to harm other people. It's going to run over those pedestrians. It harms everybody. So here's an example of two people that knew what that law said, but would we say their stop line was not far enough back? You remember the story, Acts chapter 5 and verse 1. A certain man named Ananias with Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession. In other words, they had some property. They didn't need it. It was kind of extra. So they sold it. Well, why did they sell it? Well, in the previous chapter, there was this guy named Barnabas. And what he did is he sold some property and he donated all the proceeds to the church to help those who were staying in Jerusalem, probably to have food, to stay longer, to be taught, to be a part of the beginning of the New Testament church. So Ananias and Sapphira said, hey, we could do that as well. We'll donate the money and we'll be acknowledged as somebody because we've been so generous with our money. So what did they conspire to do? They didn't actually lie, did they? Well, we'll see. They sold this possession. Verse 2, and he kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it. So the two of them talked it over. He had to be sure that she would not tell a different story than he was going to tell. So they both agreed to give a different story. It says he kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. Now, what we're not told in this account is that Ananias must have said at this point, I sold this property and I'm giving all of this profit to the church. Verse 3, Peter says, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back part of the price of the land for yourself? He says, look, while it remained, in other words, while you had it, was it not your own? You could do anything you want with it. And after it was sold, was it not your own to control? You could keep what you want, give to the church what you wanted. But there was this lie that I'm giving it all to the church. At least the impression was, yeah, I'm giving every single penny of it to the church. Well, why did Ananias want to do that? To be recognized, apparently? To get out of this, to be somebody? Because I'm so generous. I'm doing the same thing Barnabas did. Sold his land, give all of it to the church. Why, in the middle of verse 4, Peter asks, have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. Now we ask ourselves, well, have we ever kind of told these half-truths or partial truths? Now we don't have to always say everything we know about everything, but when it comes to telling the truth or not telling the truth, don't we have an obligation to that stop sign that says, do not lie. Thou shalt not bear false witness. That's a stop sign. So where's our personal stop line with regard to that commandment? Are we comfortable telling part of a story in order to deceive someone and then justify to ourselves that we really aren't lying? We're just intentionally leading people in a direction that is not true. But I didn't actually lie. Well, how did God deal with that? Remember back in the Old Testament, Abraham had this wife, beautiful wife, Sarah. And so he tells the neighboring king that this is my sister. Well, that wasn't a lie, really, because she was a half-sister. Isaac does the same thing, by the way, later on. It wasn't really a lie, but it was told with the intent to deceive. Now, again, you can understand his life may have been at risk, and yeah, we understand the issues, but God calls him on it. He says, no, that's not right. So Abraham has to explain that, yeah, I really did deceive you, and I wasn't the right thing to do. He learned that. So we have to ask ourselves, are we, and Ananias and Sapphira, are we comfortable telling partial truths or a part of the story with the intent to deceive someone else? We've got to be careful with that. So that's what Ananias did. Now, maybe he said, I've given it all to the church. How exactly he said it, we're not told. But he was lying. So Ananias, hearing these words, verse 5, fell down and breathed his last. So great fear came upon all those who heard these things. He lies and he drops dead. Now, aren't we all glad that that's not how God treats every situation? Because I'd be dead, maybe you would be too. But he was making a point at the start of the New Testament church. This is not how you get position in the church, by paying, giving big donations. That's not how you get recognition before God. Verse 6, and the young men arose, wrapped him up, carried him out, and buried him. Now, it was about 3 hours later when his wife came in, not knowing what had happened. And Peter asked her, tell me whether you sold the land for so much. So now we begin to see what Ananias had probably said. He brings this $10,000 donation, or whatever the amount was. We'll say $10,000. He brings this $10,000, and he says, I've sold my land for $10,000, and here it is for the church. Now, somehow God made Peter aware that, no, that's just not true. He didn't sell it for $10,000. He sold it for $20,000. But he's giving the impression, he is deceiving in this way, that I sold it for 10. I'm giving all 10. So wifey comes in. Sapphira is, did you sell the land for $10,000? She says, yep, sure did. Peter answered her, tell me whether you sold the land for so much. And she said, yes, for so much. Peter said to her, how is it that you have agreed together to test the spirit of the eternal, the Lord? Look, the feet of those who have buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out. And immediately she fell down at his feet and breathed her last. That's shocking. And the young men came in and found her dead, and carrying her out, buried her by her husband. So, as you can imagine, verse 11, great fear came upon all the church and upon all who heard these things. God was emphasizing your stop line needs to be pretty far back from that intersection of deception and lying. Paint that stop line back from the intersection. So we ask the question, we know how there were four categories of people reacting to the physical stop line. How about these same people reacting to spiritual stop lines? Do we have those that are just ignorant? We talked about that first category being, I don't know what a stop line is. Is it possible that there are people who are unaware of spiritual stop lines? They just don't know what is right, what is best for the moment. Their action is not based on a firm standard of right and wrong that always must be upheld. It's just, I just kind of go along in life. I think there are those people out in the world, not in the church, of course, but out there in the world. Remember a number of years ago when our daughter was small, we had a neighbor girl over. And it happened to be Sabbath morning. We only had an afternoon church that week. And so we're playing a Bible game, and she said, what's this? So she wanted to play. I mean, with absolutely no background whatsoever in anything to do with the Bible. She was cute as a little girl, but it came to the question of something, I forget what it was. It was something about Moses. And so she had absolutely no idea what the answer could possibly be. I don't think she'd ever heard of Moses. So I said, you know, the one that God gave the Ten Commandments to. And her reaction was, the what? I mean, just completely ignorant. I mean, nice little girl, nice neighbor, but just no background whatsoever. And you think that's pretty strange. Well, it's not as strange as we probably think. So we do have the ignorant. Then we have those disregarders. Most people ignore stop lines. They know that certain things are wrong, A lot of people could list at least a few of the great stop signs that God has given, but it's just not an issue they think much about. They kind of disregard them. It's so rare that there's anything talked about like that. This is so rare that anybody really gets hurt by those things. It's just part of life. So they find themselves drifting back and forth again with no real standards. They may cheat a little. They may lie a little when it's to their benefit or where they perceive that it could be to their benefit. They watch things that they probably shouldn't be watching. They do things they probably shouldn't be doing, but they just disregard stop lines altogether. Then there are those who are the rebels. Stop signs and stop lines are way too restrictive. There is no logical reason to stop at that artificial line at all. I will decide for myself where I'm going to stop. And they exhibit one of the key attributes of Satan the devil. No one is going to tell me what to do. I don't pay attention to stop signs, nor do I pay attention to any stop lines, these artificial lines that are painted in the sand. And then there are the diligent. Those that probably relatively few. I think many of our young people are in this category. They strive to stop well ahead of these great stop signs. They're careful with their lives. They stay far away from Sabbath breaking, from adultery, from hatred, from disrespect to their parents, etc. And that's the category we all want to be in. Those people who paint personal stop lines in a safe distance so that they're not hanging out into the intersection. Let's look at another example. 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel chapter 11. You're well familiar with this, no doubt. 1 Samuel, of course, is the story of Samuel. 2 Samuel pretty much contains the story of King David, before he's king and after he becomes king. 2 Samuel chapter 11, you know the story probably that we're going to, but I want you to think about this story with regard to stop lines. Not just the stop signs, but the lines that we can presume David should have painted. 2 Samuel 11 and verse 1. It happened in the spring of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel. Again, spring, the ground is now solid enough to take your chariots out and go to war without the hardships of winter. All Israel went out. They destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Reba, but David remained at Jerusalem. So he sent the army out, but the commander-in-chief stayed behind. Verse 2, it happened one evening that David arose from his bed, walked on the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. I would submit to you where was David's stop line. Had he rolled up to that stop line at this point? Now, he couldn't change the fact that there's this woman on the rooftop over there having her bath. Can't change that. What's his personal standard with regard to the seventh commandment? So David sent, verse 3, and inquired about the woman. Would you say that he's rolled past the stop line at this point, and he's heading toward the intersection? Has he put on the brakes? Again, we relate this. We can look at David and say, well, I would never do that. Yeah, I would. I could do that. That's a problem. I need to be aware of that. I need to be watching myself when it comes to this. So we can't say and point at David and say, well, oh, I would never do that if I were in his circumstance. Yeah, I probably would have. Point is, where is our line now? We look at David's circumstance, but we have to apply this personally. Ever seen a situation? I mean, computers are wonderful things. But I am shocked sometimes in my Bible program. You ever been up to, what is it, Bible Online? Bible Gateway, right? One of the most popular Bible programs in the world. What shows up in the ads? Stuff that I don't want to show up in the ads. And it's not maybe as blatant as a woman bathing over in the next rooftop over, but it's certainly not godly. So where's my stop line when those things come about? How do we deal with those things? David inquires and he says, who is this woman? Someone said, is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Notice that key word there. David, thanks for asking, but this is somebody's wife. But because David hadn't put on the brakes, was he already over the stop line? Was he about to enter the intersection of adultery and lust? About to get in an accident? You bet he was. So David sent messengers and took her. It was too late. Lust had taken over. And she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was cleansed from impurity. She returned to her house. That car was way out into the intersection, and it was about to be smashed to bits. Right? I mean, we know the story. The woman conceived. Oh, man. Talk about the worst outcome that you could imagine. And she sent and told David and said, I am with child. So you know the rest of the story. David does all kinds of things to try to back up, back out of that intersection. But it's too late. It is absolutely too late. So he says in verse 6, send me Uriah the Hittite. So Joab sent Uriah to David. When Uriah had come to him, David asked how Joab was doing, how the people were doing, how the war was going. It's all pretense. Now he's out into the intersection of deception as well. And it's interesting to note that when we roll over a stop line with one of God's great stop signs, it's usually one of those eight-sided intersections, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in the intersection of, in this case, lying and deception. David said to Uriah, go down to your house, wash your feet. So Uriah departed from the king's house, and a gift of food from the king followed him. But Uriah's stop line, his honor was painted way back. He sleeps at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord and did not go down to his house. He said, all my buds in the service are here. How could I go enjoy an evening with my sweetheart when all the buds are here defending the capital? I can't do that. So, wow, what an honorable man. Verse 10, so they told David, saying, Uriah didn't go down to his house. David said to Uriah, did you not come from a journey? Why did you not go down to your house? Uriah said to David, the ark and Israel and Judah are dwelling in tents, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are encamped in the open fields. Shall I then go to my house and eat and drink and lie with my wife? As you live and as your soul lives, I will not do this thing. Talk about an honorable man. All my buds are out there in tents in the mud, and I'm going to go in and enjoy my wife and have a big banquet? No, can't do that. Well, you know the rest of the story. We won't necessarily take the time to read through it all. But David is out there in the middle of this intersection with no protection now at all. So he gets crashed into by those other vehicles coming into the intersection. And it costs Uriah his life. It costs the baby's life later on. God requires the life of that child. It costs, really, in many respects, David's kingship, at least for a time, where his son just rebels against this. And then he has to flee. And then he has to come back. And you wonder how many of things in David's life were permanently changed because his stop line was not painted far enough back from the intersection. He got too close to sin. Had he heeded a stop line, maybe all of this could have been avoided. He harmed himself. He harmed all his passengers. He harmed Uriah, his family, Bathsheba's family, all her passengers. And at the end of his life, he has to make sure that Solomon gets set up because there was such rebellion amongst his family, such troubles among his family. All because, possibly we could say, that he didn't heed a stop line. So, at this point, we'll draw toward a close. As we examine ourselves, young people, as you plan your future, make sure we don't just identify the stop signs, but we ask ourselves the why questions, the where questions. Why do I need to observe this particular law, we might say? Where do I paint my stop lines, my personal standards, back behind that light, back behind that stop sign? So I'll give you a few suggestions. How to draw or redraw your stop lines. Some of us older individuals may say, you know, my stop line's been a little too close to that intersection. I need to back that off a bit. So step one, drawing your stop lines. Realize how vital stop lines are. Recognize these are important. Stop lines keep us safe so we don't get hurt and we don't hurt others. So stop lines, just meditate on that a little while. Think about that. What is my personal standard? It's not what the church says. I mean, the church talks. What do we talk about? We talk about stop signs. Don't do that. Don't go there. But you have to realize personally the importance of your stop line. Step number two, review the Ten Commandments with this in mind. Review the Ten Commandments with this in mind. That helps to see us, see where our stop lines currently are drawn and where we may need to redraw them. I'd like to turn with you to Proverbs chapter 19. Review each of the Ten Commandments with this in mind. You know, we have so many in our society, they look at the first commandment, you know, to... Okay, yeah, no other gods before the true God, and don't take his name in vain by the time you get down to the next one or two. Where's your stop line? And we've got hundreds of thousands, millions of people that sign things or put them on their pages, OMG, taking God's name in vain in initials. Well, somebody might say, well, I didn't actually say God's name. I just put the initials, OMG. I've seen church members that have OMG on their page. Like, what are you thinking? It's taking God's name in vain in initials. Is that the right thing? Is that what we wanted? That's this little thing, I suppose. But again, when we look at the commandment, where's my stop line? Would I use those expressions? Take God's name and treat it as if it's just another phrase, another expression, another exclamation? Well, of course we wouldn't. Proverbs 19 in verse 16. He who keeps the commandment keeps his soul. Other translations, keeps his life. We paint those stop lines in such a way with regard to God's commandments that we stay back, stay away. We're not the one that's always on the edge, pushing the limit. We've got safety. Goes on to say, but he who is careless of his ways, other translations render that he who is reckless in his ways will die. So we paint that line in such a way that we stay safe. So we look at the commandments and we say, where's my personal standard with regard to this commandment? It's a good exercise. Step number three, be conservative. Be conservative. When you paint your stop line, be conservative. Better safe than sorry, right? Now, we're not talking about becoming a Pharisee and having the stop line 23 miles before the stop sign. But we are cautioning all of us, myself included, be conservative. Better be safe than sorry. So as we analyze those personal standards, is it better to be a bit conservative? Would I rather have God say, you know, you could have gone another 10 feet before danger, versus why were you hanging out in the intersection? I think we can understand that. Again, we're not talking about being Pharisees, but we're talking about being safe. Being safe. Can other people follow our example and be safe? I think they can. So be conservative. Let's look at a different proverb. Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. We'll read verse 8 and onward for a few verses. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. My son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother. Now, my mother had a phrase that if I heard it once, I heard it 1,000 times. It was, David, nothing good happens after midnight. Now, she wasn't commenting about the clock, but she's saying, you know, you get to that point, you know, and if you paint it past midnight, you're probably going to get yourself in trouble. So it's her way of saying, paint your stop line a little bit further back than that. Verse 9, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. A beautiful hat, beautiful gold chains. My son, if sinners entice you, don't consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive like Sheol. And the whole, those who go down to the pit, we shall find all kinds of precious possessions. Not true. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Do not cast your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Don't go that direction. Keep your foot from their path. Now, I doubt that any person today, probably in this room, has had someone come to them and say, hey, join us as we ambush this individual and kill them and take their stuff. Can I see a show of hands? No, I don't want to see a show of hands. But what's the principle? The principle is don't go down that street. Paint your stop line before that road altogether. There are some roads, young people, that you do not want to travel. Period. Ever. Not a matter of a stop line in those situations. Don't go that way. But let's go on to step number 4 so we have time to quit here. Step number 4. Train your mind to see precursors. Now, you might be saying, well, that's a very long point. Say it again so I can write it down. Train your mind to see precursors. Now, what is a precursor? A precursor is something that indicates the approach of something to follow. In other words, it's what comes before the event. So a precursor to having apples on your apple tree is what? Blossoms on your apple tree. You have to have blossoms on your apple tree. They are the precursor to fruit, to apples actually being formed. You have no blossoms, you'll have no fruit, right? So precursors are the things that lead up to the consequence. So, in David's case, what were some of the precursors? Well, he sent the army out. He was home by himself. Probably not that good of an idea. Then he's up on the roof, and he's scanning around, and he sees this naked woman up there bathing. What should have been his action? Turn away. Get my mind back where it's supposed to go. Because the precursor was watching naked women. What's going to happen? What does it lead to? It increases lust, causes problems. We don't do that. We got to turn away. So precursors lead to sin, right? So we analyze, what are the precursors? What are the steps that lead me into that intersection that's going to cause me trouble, that's going to cause an accident? So paint our stop line. Draw that stop line far enough back so we don't get down that road. Now, again, that's going to be conservative. That's certainly true. Turn over a few pages here in Proverbs to Proverbs 22 in verse 3. Proverbs 22 in verse 3. See what leads up to sin so that we can avoid, we can stay back a bit. Don't have to be back in the, you know, the Stone Age, but be conservative. Proverbs 22 and verse 3, a prudent man, means a wise young person, we might say, foresees evil, sees what leads up to it. You know, when David's in the middle of the intersection and he's got to conspire with his general to have Uriah murdered, boy, he was way out there. He didn't see the precursors at all. Didn't see what led to this. A prudent man, a wise young person, foresees evil and hides him or herself. But the simple pass on and are punished. So I can't tell you where to draw your stop line. I can tell you what the stop signs are. I can give you warnings. But you personally have to sort through that and make discerning judgments as to where your personal standard is going to be. So while we may often see these lines, and they may seem unimportant, stop lines are vital to us if we draw them in the right places. Let's close by reading Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6. In verses 20 through 23. Young people, I would counsel you to draw your personal stop lines well in advance of the great stop signs so that you avoid what otherwise might be terrible accidents. Proverbs 6 in verse 20. My son, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Does that sound familiar? Pretty much what we just read in chapter 1. Bind them around your neck. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. You will be on your own spiritually. Only you responsible for your life. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. When you awake, they will speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp and the law a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. So, young people, all of us will conclude as we began. Where are your stop lines?